Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 8-Bit Adventures Podcast. We're here to bring you the latest and greatest geeky news of the week. I am your host, Sean Hayes, and we've got a couple of... we've got some interesting gaming news this week, and our deep dive is going to be... I'm going to do a primer on The Legend of Vox Machina. So this is going to be non-spoilers because pre-screenings have gone out. And I did catch two of the episodes. So both the episodes that are available already for pre-screenings. So I'm not going to do spoilers for that. And a lot of this is going to be focused on if you're not familiar with what Critical Role is or what The Legend of Vox Machina is. Because chances are, if you are familiar with what it is, you know, you don't need me to tell you what it's about. So, I hope everyone's doing well. Had some fun playing Vampire Survivor on stream last night. Thank you to everyone who showed up for that. Turns out, I ended up finishing all of the achievements today, so we won't be streaming it again. But I have to say, I just want to plug that game. If you're not familiar with it, go check it out on Steam. It's $3. It is in early access, but it is sort of like an arcade style horde mode where just waves of enemies come at you and your goal is to build, you know, collect items to, like, you know, level and build a sort of tech tree, or not tech tree really, but just, you know, you're building a set of items that automatically fire off based on their own mechanics, with the goal of surviving 30 minutes. It's great. So I would highly recommend picking that up. And it's really sort of taken off this week in particular. So I'm very excited about that. So that said, why don't we get into this week's news, shall we? All right. So first up, Pokemon Legends Arceus. The game releases January 28th, so Friday of this week. It will feature new Hisuian forms for Decidueye, Typhlosion, and Samurott. So the three starters that you get are Rowlet, Cyndaquil, and Oshawott. And then their, you know, intermediate evolutions are going to be the same. But then their final evolutions are going to have their own specific regional forms. So that'll be interesting. Give people a reason to sort of pick up this game if you're a Pokemon completionist. You know, and I have to say, like, a lot of the stuff that's come out recently has sort of turned the conversation a little bit. A lot of folks were really down in the game when they first started showing footage. And I think the conversation's kind of turned around with that. So, ultimately, you know, I'll be picking it up, and we'll see. I'm torn. I think I have to go with Rowlet again, just because he's just a squishy little ball. So, all right. So January 28th, that will be available only on Nintendo Switch. All right, so next up, next news is Apex Legend developer Respawn, a subsidiary of EA, is working on a Jedi Fallen Order sequel, as well as two other Star Wars games, EA announced. This is to do this before EA's exclusivity deal expires in 2023, after which point Star Wars, or Lucasfilm and Lucasfilm Games, will likely be shopping out the license to other companies. Just because that Battlefront 2, you know, Star Wars Battlefront 2 fiasco really hurt EA's standing with the company. and how they want to do stuff. So who knows? Maybe, you know, Lucasfilm, you know, I hear there's a developer from back in the day that would love to do Rogue Squadron again. But yeah, so we're going to get Jedi Fallen Order 2 and then two other Star Wars games from Respawn specifically. But obviously, you know, they're not going to have those games finished before 2023. So we'll see. But, you know, Jedi Fallen Order, as I understand it, was very good. So here's hoping that Respawn in particular can continue to deliver. Raven Studios. So this is one of the studios under Activision, one of the Call of Duty studios. So they were part of the whole controversy where a number of QA testers, after a sort of sizable layoff of the QA department, the remaining members went on strike and then unionized. So they have finally come off of being on strike and have set up a union. Coincidentally, now, whether this is a mere coincidence or not, or if it's, you know, nefariously timed, upon returning to work, Raven actually broke up the QA team and placed them with different departments, in separate departments across the company. So, for example, if somebody, like, it's now not the QA department and there's all people with different specialties within the QA department, now QA testers are going to be broken up and put into whatever department their specialty was. So there may be, you know, programming QA, there may be level design QA, art QA, but they're now with these separate departments instead of all together as a QA group. This has been noted as a union busting tactic. So Raven has claimed that this was already in the works, you know, prior to the layoffs and the unionization. So we'll see how that comes up, you know, whether it pushes more people to join the union at the company or whether it ends up fizzling out the unionizing efforts. We remains to be seen, but, yeah, the timing was not a good look. Let's put it that way. So once again, another PR blunder for Activision and Blizzard subsidiaries. And speaking of Blizzard, so some not dire, terrible news for once. They're announcing an unannounced survival game. So previously unannounced survival game. This is going to be based on a new IP. So Blizzard announced that they're starting work on it in the form of, like, it's sort of a project announcement slash putting together a team. So in the posting, they specifically mentioned that they want to look for diverse voices and talents when putting together this team. So, you know, this might be sort of, you know, obviously this is the first project since the whole lawsuit happened. So, you know, it based on who ends up joining the team, it remains to be seen if Blizzard is actually, you know, going through with their supposed new mission statement, or at least, you know, supposed new guidelines on how things are done. But we'll have to see. So, you know, and obviously no word whatsoever on what this IP is. I mean, it looks somewhat fantasy in the artwork here. Yeah, no, it's yeah, very, very high fantasy stuff. So, that'll be interesting. You know, new IP is always interesting. So we'll see, if it can catch on and hold, and also, like, if it's going to be multiplayer, if it's going to be single player, single player with multiplayer elements. So yeah. You know, personally, I would love to see a move away from massively multiplayer, perhaps, and do, you know, maybe like a Minecraft style thing where like you can invite people, like you can set up a world and invite people to it or whatever, or even do local multiplayer. I don't know. I'm tired of dealing with strangers. So, but yeah, here's hoping that they can actually put together a decent team, and that, you know, maybe that team, by putting together a team that has many different kinds of voices on it, leads to a good product and prompts other teams to take note and sort of restructure under that model. It'd be interesting, you know, with the timing of last week's announcement with Microsoft, if you know, how this will factor into that. So yeah, you know, could be very exciting. Who knows? All right, last up. So this is a sort of odd duck in the announcements, but Elgato, who makes all sorts of stream accessories and peripherals, they've announced a Stream Deck pedal. So what this is, it's like a three button pedal, that you can then, you know, tie into your computer and use it in combination with like a Stream Deck, that allows you to do hands-free sort of button toggles and macros and things. You know, mainly, it looks like the chief audience for this would be, you know, streamers that focus on music streams and DJs. But you know, like with the Stream Deck, you can set it up so that it performs any number of commands on your computer. So like you could use this to open up Photoshop and do various tasks. So this, I mean, it's pretty interesting. You know, I mean, it's even something, you know, I might be interested in doing. You know, just to set up like a mic on off switch, you know, especially if I'm not feeling well. And instead of having to like reach over and like hit a button or whatever, you know, just be able to tap my foot on the pedal, you know, press my foot on the pedal and be able to turn stuff on and off. Also, you know, accessibility factor, you know, if, you know, and I was talking about this with Vampire Survivor, since, you know, it only uses the WASD keys. You know, if say you only have the use of one hand, or if you know, if you have a limited dexterity, you know, this provides another option for interfacing with, say, a Stream Deck. It's a little pricey at $90. But, you know, if you are, you know, in the business, you know, in the game, might be worth checking it out. Elgato has also announced that they are setting up fully official Discord integration with the Stream Deck. So that's cool. Namely being able to do things like you know, switching channels, doing you know, voice call commands and things like that. But yeah, anytime companies set up official plugins for the Stream Deck, super helpful, super awesome. So that we're not relying on, you know, sort of third-party plugins and APIs to do stuff, which may then become deprecated. Looking at you, Spotify. So yeah. As I said, the Stream Deck pedal is available for $89.99 on the Elgato store. You know, it'll likely be available at GameStop, Amazon, all those places there, so there may be deals on that. I'll have to look into it and let you all know. I got to get better at setting up macros and stuff. It seems like a really interesting thing for interfacing with your PC. That is going to wrap up the quickfire news for this week. So let's get ready for the deep dive as we talk about the legend of Vox Machina. Okay, so for those who don't know what the Legend of Vox Machina is, and you may have seen, you know, they've been doing a pretty heavy ad campaign. So you may have seen ads for it and you're like, oh, I don't know what this is. Chances are, if you are listening to this podcast, you probably already know what it is. But just in case. The Legend of Vox Machina is an animated television series from sort of a joint effort from a Kickstarter campaign backed by the fans of Critical Role, which is a Twitch-based Dungeons & Dragons live play web series, okay, where this group of fairly prominent voice actors who are all friends, you know, they get together and they play Dungeons & Dragons for about 4 hours a week. You know, they live stream it. Very epic campaigns that go 150 plus episodes per campaign. You know, often through multiple story arcs. You know, each campaign takes probably 3 to 4-ish years, probably about 3 years. No, maybe 4, because they do take breaks, like for the holidays and stuff. So around 4 years. The Legend of Vox Machina follows some of the events of campaign 1, which started, geez, probably around 2014, 2015-ish. And started out as a home game that, you know, after about a year or so, it was Felicia Day of Geek and Sundry at the time approached them and said, hey, you know, I think this would be really great as a web series. You know, why don't you guys do it? So they all talked about it and they agreed to do it. And since then, you know, they moved to Twitch. They, you know, ballooned in popularity, and are in no small part of why Dungeons and Dragons is now as popular as it is. There are some folks who have their own opinions on that. But from a business perspective, you know, it doesn't really matter why people are playing the game. The more reach the game has, the better it is for the game overall. And I think it's also between the accessibility of 5th edition and things like Critical Role, the Adventure Zone, and other properties, it's also brought in a much more diverse audience than prior editions have done, which also helps the game. It's going to help the game get better. So that's a little primer on like Critical Role. So Legend of Vox Machina started as a Kickstarter campaign, and you know, they thought they were going to fund like a single 22-minute animated special, and then it, you know, it exploded beyond their wildest imaginations, and they got enough to do a full season. And then they announced that after the success of the Kickstarter, companies were then approaching them after having, you know, sort of poo-pooed them and shooed them away to, you know, start signing deals. I guess Amazon signed a deal that was to their liking. So Amazon set up the funding for a second season. So two seasons have already been confirmed, and it will be available on Amazon Prime Video. But there are also options for the Kickstarter backers who, for whatever reason, either don't have Amazon Prime or what. They're still working out the logistics of that. In doing this Kickstarter project, Critical Role partnered with Titmouse, who, you know, if you are a fan of any of these shows that appear on Adult Swim, you might be familiar with their work. They are an animation studio. I believe they're based in Georgia. You know, they worked on a lot of sort of big name projects. They have put together an all-star voice cast that includes, you know, because they're all voice actors, they're in the industry, and they do a lot of work in the industry, so they've gotten some pretty big names. The main cast, which are the players of the game, you know, consists of Laura Bailey, Taliesin Jaffe, Ashley Johnson, Liam O'Brien, Marisha Ray, Sam Riegel, Travis Willingham, and Matthew Mercer. Lot of work in video games and anime. But they also, through their connections, through, you know, and through personal relationships, you know, have also recruited Stephanie Beatrice as Lady Kima, Kari Payton as Sovereign Uriel Tal'Dorei, Indira Varma as Lydia Lura Vysorin, Greg Griffin as Delilah Briarwood, Tony Hale as Sir Fintz, Max Middleman as Desmond, Stacey Raymond as Bryn, Sunil Malhotra as Gilmore, one David Tennant as General Krieg. So likely a connection from DuckTales, as Sam Riegel was the, sort of voice director for the show. Felicia Day and Darren DePaul, and Cree Summer sort of, having like bit parts, as well as, Mason Alexander Park. So very exciting, star-studded cast list there. You know, animated series, I believe the episodes are about 22 minutes long. And I can't remember. I think they're going to be like 12 episode seasons, I think. So they're going to premiere 3 episodes at a time. On Amazon Prime. It's largely going to be a high fantasy animated series that takes place in the world of Tal'Dorei, which is Matthew Mercer's own setting. Tries to not throw a lot of information at you at once, which, you know, it's difficult because, you know, the cast and a lot of the fans of the show, you know, have essentially sat through, you know, you figure 600 hours or no, 115. Sorry. Campaign one was 115 episodes at, we'll say, an average of 4 hours an episode. So 460 hours worth of content, you know, with these characters. And so, you know, I think they did a decent job, having seen the first two episodes, of trying to introduce them as new characters and give you a little bit of their personality without just sort of like assuming that you know what the series is about. and to a certain extent, you know, a lot of the characters, they have their complexities, but they also sort of in a very, you know, like stylized, like comic slash cartoon way, you know, could be reduced down to like a character trait to summarize their character. One word of caution, you know, if you are not familiar with this series and you see, oh, animated series. Okay. This is not for children. This is a very hard TV MA. Okay. This is also like, this would not, like, despite the fact that it being TVMA, I don't know if you could show it on Adult Swim. Like, it would be, like, on HBO. So think about it that way. Like, you know, sort of, it's not, it's hard, it's a hard comparison to make to, like, Game of Thrones. But it's definitely like very harsh language. There are certainly adult themes. You know, there is being high fantasy and based on a D&D product. There is violence, and they do, you know, some amount of gore. Okay, so. You know, it's certainly not something to the level of like Super Jail. You know, it is there. Okay. But yeah, word of caution, like this is not for children. Okay. Like if this were a film, this would be like this would be a hard R. Okay. So that's to give you an idea of that. All right. You've been warned. Because I know for certain that there are going to be parents out there who, you know, see this on Amazon Prime. They don't know what it is. And they show their kid. And, you know, and they don't waste any time in the first episode. Like, they get right in and, you know, there's F-bombs and, you know, about halfway or a third of the way through the first episode, There's some adult situations. So, that's a word of caution. Okay. Because I know people personally who, you know, who have gotten upset when, there are cartoon series that are made for adults that do adult things because cartoons are, quote, for children. So, I just want to reiterate that this is an adult cartoon made by a studio that specializes in doing adult cartoons. You know, things like Aqua Teen Hunger Force. Okay. I can't remember what else Titmouse has worked on. I'm sure I know they've worked on a bunch of stuff, but like that's what I remember them working on. Big Mouth. All right, so let's see. Venture Brothers. They worked on some stuff. Short films, video games, commercials. Was that just awards that they worked on? Sorry. Oh, filmography. No, okay. Metalocalypse. Let's see. Black Dynamite, Super Jail, Venture Brothers. But all, I mean, you know, they did some work on Nemegas XLR and Avatar. So there's that too. Did they not do Did they actually not do Aqua Teen Hunger Force? Am I just having... they did Star Trek The Lower Decks, right? Why? I don't understand. Hang on. Hang on. Now I'm having... Oh, no, that was William Street. Okay. Sorry, I'm getting William Street and Titmouse mixed up. Because, like, the two of them were very prominent. Okay. But yeah. So, I mean, they've worked on some stuff for, you know, that's been designed as children's animation. As, like, children's animated series. But they've also worked, you know, I mean, Metalocalypse and Super Jail are very much not in that category, right? So, so yeah, you know, this is something, you know, don't watch with the kiddos, unless your kiddos are older. But yeah. I mean, it's definitely, one of the things, you know, they specified in the Kickstarter was when going with an animated series is that they did not want to dilute the feel of the web series. You know, and the web series is an adult show. You know, there are adult themes and situations that happen, whether of various types. So, I mean, it, you know, it would be for mature audiences. Okay. So just keep that in mind. I know I've sort of hit that over and over and over again, but it's because I've had those conversations that I do not want anybody to, for whatever reason, just think animation. Oh, okay. Yeah, no. So, let's see. So despite the fact that it's based on a D&D property, okay, so a couple things. It doesn't deal with Dungeons and Dragons as a game, okay? So it's not like they're going to cut to, you know, the players playing D&D. You know, nor, now this gets into a little weird thing, nor does it have any reference to things that are technically the intellectual property of Wizards of the Coast, right? So it does not mention Dungeons and Dragons. It does not mention, you know, there are certain, so what's considered as part of the trade dress for D&D are certain, like, proper nouns and certain monster names, right? So you won't hear beholders, you won't hear illithids, or I think it's Illithid and not Mind Flayer. But in either case, like, there won't be any of that. You know, Matt Mercer did this for their first stream game where he changed basically a lot of the deity names. So that, you know, they weren't infringing on any copyrights. And then they, you know, they'd be buddied up with Wizards, and now Wizards says it's okay to use them. But so they use, like, a lot of the custom names, to refer to the same deity, but it's, as long as you don't use that proper name, it's not considered, trademark infringement. You know, and some of them, like, you can get away with, like, because Tiamat, pre-existed Dungeons and Dragons, as well as Bahamut. Right. So you can use those, but, like, you know, there's some discussion of some deities, we'll say, that are explicitly Dungeons and Dragons that may or may not be utilized later. So, yeah. So you don't, like, if you're not interested at all in D&D, but you like, you know, fantasy, you know, you don't have to worry about that. you know, that said, it does have some themes that are common to most D&D games, where it's a group of heroes that have an adventuring company, that mercenary work is common. You know, many of them have trauma that they're dealing with. So, yeah, I'm trying to think of, you know, I thought, it kind of dove into the action, a bit quickly. So I do worry if it's going to move a little, if the pacing's going to be a little too fast. But I, you know, I don't know. You know, we'll have to see, you know, as more episodes come out. You know, just thinking like based on, you know, current properties that have come out, like The Mandalorian, Book of Boba Fett, and things like that. Or basically, you know, any of the number of series on Disney Plus. But who knows, you know? Yeah, ultimately, you know, I enjoyed the first two episodes. I hope, this primer, was useful for a lot of folks, and that, if you're interested in high fantasy shows, that you might, check it out. So they come out on Friday. The first three episodes release on Friday, on Amazon Prime Video. Okay. So if you have Amazon Prime, you'll be able to get the series. So, which also means, that you can do a watch party on Twitch with it. So, that is a thing where, if you don't have Amazon Prime, but you do want to see it, the Critical Role channel will be doing a watch party on Tuesdays. So you can watch it there. You know, and that's something where if you know, for the people in my community are interested, you know, I'd certainly be willing to set up watch parties and look into that. But right now, streams have been kind of quiet, so it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But, you know, again, if that's something people are interested in, can definitely set that up, you know, especially for the folks, if for whatever reason they don't have Amazon Prime, but want to see it. You know. So, yeah. Hopefully, this was educational. And hopefully gave you a little bit more information on what this is. I mean, this is literally like a weird phenomena in that this went from a home game among just a bunch of voice actors, you know, who are all into nerdy stuff, to one of the top earning Twitch accounts that became, you know, turned into like a small business. And I, you know, I say small business, but like, in the sense that like, it's not just, you know, the seven or eight of them, the eight of them, that like, they have like 50 employees, that all do production effects and everything. They built a whole new studio for their stuff. They are one of the top earners on Twitch. In terms of revenue from subs and ad revenue. And then not to mention, you know, merch deal, like it was enough that they started their own, sort of game publishing branch, of their company. And then they set up like a nonprofit foundation as well. So, I mean, this is sort of, you know, there was a whole lot of pushback, when they got really big, but like, this is, to a certain extent, like most creators' dreams of you did a thing and then it got super popular and you were able to like turn that thing into a legitimate business and, you know, provide jobs for other people, you know, to help more fully realize your project, you know, and what you're working on. So yeah, it's a very, very weird thing. And to a certain extent, you know, something a bit special to see in our lifetime. So who knows? Who knows where else it'll take us? You know, hopefully, you know, the series turns out well. One of the things is, so they, so the cast, and technically the owners of these characters, I believe they retain, you know, because it's their series, like they wanted full creative control, and to make a decision. So they're all executive producers. I believe they retain, is it like they retain the IP, and it's like Amazon has like distribution rights or something. So they were able to control ownership of their IP, which is something that, you know, other, service platforms, like weren't necessarily willing to offer. And so I think ultimately that's why they ended up going like the Kickstarter route. And to a certain extent, like, I guess one of the characters in the show, well, like one of the other characters, one of the minor characters was like created by the Kickstarter backers and like by the fans. So that was really interesting. I didn't know that. So that was neat to see. So yeah. Hopefully you can check it out. If there's demand for a watch party, you know, I'm certainly willing to host a watch party one of these days. Just hit me up on social media. You can send me an email, Sean@8-bitadventures.com. If there's enough interest, we'll make it happen. So, which, you know, because it's on Amazon Prime, we can do that, and not get our accounts banned like Disguised Toast and other folks. So yeah. All right. I think we've talked enough about that. So let's move on to quest log. So quest log is where I talk about sort of just like little goals that I set each week. Sort of like a quest journal if you're playing some sort of RPG game. So last week I said I was going to color a chapter one comic and play a little bit of Arcanium, Netflix's sort of card battler adventure RPG game. So I did. I played through kind of like the first level or first world, rather. Played a little bit of it. Definitely interesting. It's not. I can't say that it's grabbed my interest in the way that that Vampire Survivors and Raid Shadow Legends have. You know, or going back to Skyrim and things like that. But it's definitely charming. And you know, it's definitely a neat little mobile game. Great art style. You know, and interesting mechanics. You know, I don't want to sell it short. Like, it is a, like, it's a good game. It's just right now it happened to hit right at the time there's a whole bunch of other stuff coming out. And that's bad for me. Cause it's always like, there's always something that's going to rise to the top, you know, above everything else. And that's what's going to get my attention. And it happened to come at a bad time. But that said, I mean, it's all, you know, like, I have a Netflix account, so it was free. You know, and I'm looking forward to just, you know, picking it up every now and again. I do like the fact it doesn't seem to be multiplayer, at least as far as I can tell. I haven't done any multiplayer stuff with it. So I do like that aspect where it's not a competitive thing and that it's like a story that I can go through and play through. So that, you know, it's not like Hearthstone where, you know, if I don't play for, you know, if I'm not playing Hearthstone anymore, but like when I was playing, like if I didn't play for, you know, 2 weeks or whatever, I felt like I fell so far behind because the whole entirety of that game is competitive. So my goal is to play a little bit more of that. Gonna play some Banjo-Kazooie. Got that in the graphic right there, since that's out for the Nintendo Switch Online expansion pack. I wanna go through and play that. I still have my original copies of Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie, as well as my N64. So I had considered like doing some retro gaming on the stream, but then like having to invest in a bunch of conversion cables and things like that just to get the N64 set up, and then was it actually going to look good? Having to negotiate an N64 controller. It's nice to have that around for like the novelty and maybe like once in a while, like pulling it out. But the issue is, blowing that stuff up to the screens that we have now, I don't know if it would look good. I haven't done it before, and I don't know like if it would just look blurry and messy, or if it's you have to really like go find like an old 14-inch CRT, which I think I still have one somewhere, and just like keep that around for doing retro gaming. I don't know. But yeah, so it's available now, and emulating on the Switch. So yeah, there's my opportunity. And then the goal is get another Chapter 1 comic done. So the next one is going to be, comic 91 of Chapter 1. So getting there, steadily getting to the coveted, comic 100. So ultimately we got 2 out of 2 done. Let's see if we can make it 3 for 3 by the end of next week. I think chances are pretty good. We're supposed to get a lot of snow this weekend. So I don't know how busy we'll be. here's hoping. Who knows? Maybe I'll do a little stream of Banjo-Kazooie or something. Bring the Baron Bird back on the stream. So I'm looking forward to it. So that is going to wrap up this week's episode. Thank you all for joining me. If you would like to see more content from 8-Bit Adventures, including the 8-Bit Adventures comic, fan art that I've done, or just general artwork that I've done, stream VODs, podcast episodes, and more, go check out the website over at 8-bitadventures.com. If you would like to help support that content, the best way to do that is to become a patron over at patreon.com/8bitadventures. You can become a patron for as little as $1 a month, and you get early access to comics. There are some patron exclusive comics there. I do post episodes of the pod, I do post the VODs of the podcast there. As well as when we get back to doing other podcasts, they'll get posted there as well. There's some behind the scenes sort of playtest D&D content that's up there. So as little as $1 a month, which is again 20% of the cost of a Twitch subscription. And you get all that for it. Big shout out and thank you to all of our current patrons. Thank you for your support. Thank you for helping to keep servers paid for, like hosting servers paid for, and the D&D Beyond subscription paid for my D&D group, which we use when we're eventually gonna get the show back on. So we will be using it for that. Our opening theme is One Up by Professor Shy Guy. You can find his work over at professorshyguy.bandcamp.com. Big shout out and thank you to him for letting us use that track all these years since episode 1. It will be in the show notes, but we do have a Discord server. There is the link in chat. And as I said, for audio listeners, it will be in the link for the Discord server will be in the show notes. If you want to come hang out, chat, That is honestly my preferred place to converse with people, because you don't have to deal with social media algorithms. You know, I post the comics, I post the YouTube VODs for the podcasts. I just set up a Stardew Sundays channel, so when videos come out for that, I will post them there. You know, in a gaming channel to talk about games and stuff. I just, because I don't have to deal with a timeline that is curated, quote unquote, by a social media platform, it just means that, you know, I can more directly reach people, which I miss. That's the part of social media that I miss. You know, when it first started. So, this is me just hating social media. So, but it's there if you would like to join. So, also notifications of when I stream. So there's that too. All right. With that, we're done. So, as always, have fun, happy gaming, and enjoy your pie cake.